This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, February 1st, 2002. I'm Max Pringle. Coming up, the world's top business and governmental elites gather in New York City. Demonstrators are there to meet them. President Bush labeled North Korea this week a potential threat, but relations with South Korea are also far from chummy. And protesters say no to NATO in Munich. These stories and more today on Free Speech Radio News. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Nell Abram with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. The fate of kidnapped Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl is unknown today. News organizations received an email claiming that Pearl has been killed. The email's origin could not be determined. Meantime, there are reports from Karachi police that a group is reportedly demanding $2 million in ransom within the next 36 hours for Pearl's release. Neither report has been confirmed. Media groups declared Zimbabwe's free press silenced after Parliament passed a bill essentially gagging independent journalists. Naeem Jenna reports from Johannesburg.
Zimbabwe's new media law has been roundly condemned from within and without the country, but the government has rejected criticism, saying there was nothing wrong with the draconian legislation. Earlier, Parliament's legal committee, dominated by members of the ruling ZANU-PF party, rejected the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Bill as unconstitutional. The British and US governments and a number of media organizations internationally have criticized the law. It forces journalists to be licensed by a media commission in order to work. Foreign correspondents may not be based in Zimbabwe, and journalists may report only official comments on government work. Violations carry stiff fines or up to 2 years imprisonment. Journalists say they will apply to Zimbabwe's Supreme Court to declare the law unconstitutional. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Naeem Jina in Johannesburg.
Israeli reservists who refused to serve in the occupied territories gained support for their protest today from the former head of Israel's Internal Security Service, Ami Ayalon. Free Speech Radio News spoke with correspondent Peretz Kidron, who is also an organizer for a group that supports Israeli soldiers who oppose the military's policies towards Palestinians.
Well, Ami Ayalon enjoys a kind of personal prestige which makes him very difficult to attack. He is an unusually outspoken, extremely honest man. The military establishment will have to respond to him in some way because he points out the validity of the complaints. After all, these soldiers didn't refuse just out of the blue. They claim that what the army is doing consists of war crimes, terrorism against civilians, and so on. And each one of them cites specific instances in which he personally experienced or in which he was involved, including killings and all kinds of ill treatment of the Palestinian population. And Ayalon makes very similar claims, and he says he's very worried by the fact that there have been so few refusals.
That was Free Speech Radio News correspondent Peretz Kidron speaking with us from Jerusalem. President Bush today proposed a pension safeguard program. Gareth Schweitzer has more from Washington.
The president's proposals may be more symbolic than practical. Under the proposed new regulations, workers would be able to sell off company stock, including shares contributed by companies as matching grants, after 3 years. Employees would also be free to pursue outside investment options. But critics believe that the proposals would do little to prevent another Enron disaster, as employees' retirement savings programs would still be overburdened by company stock. Critics also contend that outside investment advice for employees, part of the president's proposal, may not be objective. Democratic lawmakers on Capitol Hill support stricter regulations, including a proposal to limit the amount of investment an employee could have in any one stock in their individual retirement account to 20%. That proposal, sponsored by California Senator Barbara Boxer, would also cut in half the tax breaks companies get for matching employees' 401k contributions with stock. In Washington, D.C., I'm Gareth Schweitzer for Free Speech Radio News.
The British government announced 44 sites where genetically modified crops will be grown in the U.K. in trials designed to test whether genetically modified farming has a detrimental effect on the environment. Anastasia Kershaw reports from London.
The sites have been chosen in the final year of a three-year trial, and sowing is due to begin on the 15th of March. The government has struggled in recent years against public distrust of GM farming due to worries about the impact on human health, wildlife, and the environment. previous trials triggered protests because the trials were kept secret and complaints that plants were not sufficiently quarantined from surrounding stock. Friends of the Earth says it expects the forthcoming trials to spark even more protest, with evidence building up that GM crops contaminate the native plant stock. Ministers say that permission will only be given to grow GM crops commercially after the tests finish and if the environment does not suffer unacceptable effects. This is Anastasia Kershaw reporting from London for Free Speech Radio News.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Nell Abram.
While 3,200 of the world's top business leaders and government officials gather in New York for the World Economic Forum, thousands of anti-corporate globalization protesters are demonstrating in the streets. Several protesters have been arrested for vandalism, but most of the demonstrations have been peaceful. From New York City, Jeff Brady has this report.
Seven ACT UP protesters were among the first demonstrators to be arrested for dropping massive banners in Midtown New York City. The banners demanded that corporations provide AIDS drugs for workers in poor countries. ACT UP members say the World Economic Forum is endorsing mass death by skirting the issue of access to affordable AIDS drugs. Meanwhile, at the largest demonstration so far, hundreds of New York City police corral an equal number of protesters behind metal barricades along Fifth Avenue in front of the Gap's flagship store to protest sweatshop labor. Chris Ruttman, a theater performer, gathers protest signs inside the demonstration pen. He says the demonstration is sending a delicate message to the Gap, which is not for people to stop buying clothes from the corporation, but to inform the Gap that many people are unhappy with the way they're exploiting workers.
Our goal is to say, listen, you have enough consumers at this point who want to buy your clothing, who want better standards, that it's to your benefit to improve your image. And to improve your system. It's so hard to categorize, but I think it's sort of a moral blind spot that an executive has who works in his office every day and will never ever sit down at the table with someone who is making the T-shirts that his company sells. And if he did, it would change everything.
But Rubin says usually when the issues of workers' rights come up, most executives, like those meeting at the WEF, think about it in terms of how it will affect their stockholders. Demonstrator Moki Smith is in his early 20s. He says an apathy pervades the students and friends in his high school when he would discuss the issues of sweatshops and child labor connected with the production of Gap clothing.
All right, I went to a very affluent high school, right? And everybody bought their clothes from, you know, Abercrombie, The Gap, or whatever. And I try to explain to them that little kids made these things, but they didn't care. They just don't care. That's more important. They don't know and they don't care.
The WEF sets the agenda as a rally point for the global elites seeking to influence political agendas. Among the financial giants meeting at the WEF are American Airlines, Boeing, Cisco Systems, Coca-Cola, Compaq, IBM, Merrill Lynch, PepsiCo, and Microsoft. Shortly after the September 11th attacks, Boeing has taken hundreds of millions of dollars of federal money, but immediately thereafter laid off hundreds of American workers by moving production of 737s to China. Coca-Cola is being sued in a U.S. court for complicity in the killings of union activists in Colombia. Kevin Fleming, a student from Washington, D.C., wearing an Army field jacket, says the meetings are multi-million-dollar cocktail parties where the select decision-makers could care less about the economic inequalities.
These people are having a party trying to decide, you know, what to do with this and this with, you know, my millions of dollars, and it's just absurd. I understand that to them this is a joke. I'm not going to change their minds. You know, those people are set in their ignorant ways already.
The many issues activist groups plan to address this weekend range from corporate environmental destruction, such as air pollution and deforestation, to the exploitation of workers internationally and locally. As demonstrations gear up, hundreds of police have been stationed throughout Midtown Manhattan, and especially around corporate chains such as Starbucks and McDonald's. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Jeff Brady in New York.
As 3,200 worldwide corporate and political leaders arrived in New York City to convene the annual meeting of the World Economic Forum, labor representatives from around the globe held their own meeting in Midtown Manhattan. Scott Harris attended the AFL-CIO-sponsored event and has this report.
The AFL-CIO brought seven workers from China, Central America, and the U.S. to New York to speak at what they called a Working Families Economic Forum. These men and women met in an auditorium just several blocks from the exclusive Waldorf Astoria Hotel, where powerful business executives and politicians are meeting this week. They told their stories of sweatshop labor conditions, anti-union campaigns, and devastating plant closings. Collectively, they painted a dark picture of corporate-led globalization and free trade policies advocated by many who are gathering at the World Economic Forum. Sophia Sazo, a garment worker who made clothes for The Gap in Guatemala, recounted through a translator the harsh conditions at the plant, which motivated her to organize a union.
When we came into work in the morning, they searched us. And the search was even harder, even more thorough when we left. It was humiliating. They touched us all over our bodies. But one has to work. And that's why I'm here today, to help my compañeras, my fellow workers, have a dignified work, and to remember that all of us are human beings.
Agnes Wong, a laid-off sewing machine operator in New York's Chinatown for 20 years, spoke of the exploitation of immigrants here at home.
Usually the people at this workshop, the people is immigrant to this country is undocumented. They don't know nothing about this country. They don't know about unions. And they just scare. They just keep working, even they cannot make $2 an hour. Sometimes we want to organize them, but the factory, non-union factory, they will not open the door for us. So it is very difficult to push them to join the union.
Ross Scheffler is a member of the United Steelworkers Union who was recently laid off at an LTV steel plant in Cleveland, Ohio. He marched at the 1999 Anti-World Trade Organization protests in Seattle and was blunt about what he thought of corporate executives who move American jobs overseas in search of low wages and higher profits.
Some of our corporate leaders would rather leave this country, go to a different country, exploit that workforce because they don't have to spend that extra money. I think it's a shame. I think it's a crime. I think some of these CEOs should be in jail.
Before more than 500 union supporters picketed the nearby Fifth Avenue Gap store for their use of overseas sweatshop labor, AFL-CIO President John Sweeney told his audience why the labor movement had come to protest the policies advocated by business leaders at the World Economic Forum.
The global economy does not work for working people, and that is why we are here in New York, to challenge Enron economics at home and abroad. We have to change the rules that were made by and for corporations, and it will be no easy or short-term task. So we are here to strengthen and deepen the spirit and solidarity that were born in Seattle and change the direction of the debate over globalization.
While the AFL's Sweeney speaks on two panels inside the World Economic Forum this week, thousands of labor, environmental, and student activists are planning to protest outside the elite gathering tomorrow. Meanwhile, the Union Federation's Vice President, Linda Chavez-Thompson, is leading a delegation to the Alternative World Social Forum in Porto Alegre, Brazil. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Scott Harris in New York City.
In its first public reaction to being called part of an axis of evil, North Korea today said President Bush's pronouncement was little short of a declaration of war. Meanwhile, Bush's hardline rhetoric has strained American relations with its South Korean ally. South Korea advocates a more diplomatic approach to dealing with its northern neighbor. And as Alan Lefkowitz reports, many South Koreans are growing weary of the large U.S. military presence in their country.
In South Korea, Saturday is the demonstration day. Thousands of students, workers and professionals claim the same thing in the streets of Chung-gu, one of the famous places of Seoul City. U.S. go home. America becomes the symbol of all the social and economical frustrations in a country touched by the crisis. Yoongae is a young Korean artist. She explains what is written on the main streamers.
Daewoo, it's for the Koreans and not for America. And they say also that they are against the Japanese because they think that the Japanese are here to steal the Korean wealth. But they are all here for the Korean country. This demonstration is a nationalistic one, and to be anti-American is to be a nationalist.
For Thomas Dimek, a young French expert, this is a question of the American colonial attitude towards the Korean.
The relationship between the South Korean people and the American soldiers is fixed by the SOFA law, which is a military act. But according to the civic organization and the local population, this agreement is largely unfavorable to the South Koreans because it costs us a lot, because the soldiers impose their rules in the place they live, around the military camps, because the soldiers are not under the South Korean legislation, and so on. So a lot of American privileges are not accepted anymore by the population because the North Korean threat is not so great anymore.
And so, despite George W. Bush's State of the Union declarations against North Korea, 50 years after the end of the Civil War, the separation of the country, and the settling of the American army at the borders on the 38th parallel, the new generation of South Koreans wants to be independent.
We are demonstrating right now to show our opinion is go home to U.S. Army. Sorry, my English is not good to explain what we are doing. But the important thing is going home. We are saying to them, just go home. Because they don't have any right to live in Korea, because we are just in independent country. They don't need to keep our country anymore. We think they should go their home.
Many South Koreans feel like they are under armed American occupation. Joo Moon Young is a politician professor at the Seoul University. For him, the American soldiers are not going to quit his land because of the strategic position of South Korea.
More than 30,000 American soldiers are in South Korea since the end of the war in 1950. This situation induces some problems now in our society because the American thinks that this country belongs to him, and he thinks that we are still under his influence. But after the economic development of South Korea, we think that relations between the two countries have to be adjusted to new economical and social realities. But the Americans don't want this adjustment because the soldiers are very powerful. That is why, for the last 10 years, you have seen anti-American movement building in South Korea. South Korea is a sovereign country, but if you compare the military capacity between the South and the North, you can see the North is more powerful than us, and with its 30,000 Marines in our country, America controls all of Asia. That is why I think the Americans have no intention to quit the Korean Peninsula.
Waiting a total independence, the young South Korean people try to have a better life on the tempo of American music. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Alan Lefkovich in Seoul.
The Bush administration has announced it wants to expand federal prenatal health care benefits. The benefits program would be part of a $135 million proposal to promote abstinence-only education programs. The proposal strikes many pro-choice advocates as an attempt to whittle away at Roe v. Wade. From Washington, Kata Mester reports.
The Bush proposal is a major victory for abortion opponents who for years have been attempting to win for unborn fetuses the same rights as living human beings. Douglas Johnson, legal director of the National Right to Life Committee.
We applaud this proposal by the administration. It recognizes that unborn children are children, and that they often are in need of medical services during the prenatal period. This will be a benefit to the babies and the mothers as well.
Under the Bush proposal, a developing fetus would be eligible for federal health insurance directed towards low-income families. Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson maintained the plan was the fastest way to get more low-income women eligible for subsidized prenatal care. Judith DeSarno is president of National Family Planning.
This is an appalling gift to the far right wing that they should be ashamed about. you know, we all need to really be clear that no one opposes making sure that low-income women have access to prenatal care. There are programs already in place in this country that can be expanded to do this and are underfunded, but instead the administration has decided to make a political statement that widens the wars over abortion, and that's disgraceful. They've really tried by fiat to make the fetus a child, and that has great legal ramifications.
DiSarno says there is already a joint federal-state 10-year $40 billion plan implemented in 1997 to cover health insurance from childbirth until the age of 19. States are able to extend coverage to pregnant women by obtaining a federal waiver without confronting the issue of whether a fetus should be classified as a child. Detractors of the proposal insist the Bush administration is creating a legal pathway to criminalize abortion. Many in the reproductive rights community argue extending legal rights to an unborn child will inevitably undermine the protections covered in Roe v. Wade. Pro-choice leaders see recognizing the embryo and fetus under the law as a calculated interim step. During his presidency, Bush has made it clear he is aligned with opponents of abortion. On his first day in office, he revoked funding for international reproductive rights programs, reinstating the so-called global gag rule. Bush also calls for bans on public funding for abortion and a ban on the procedure for late-term abortions.
President Bush came to office committed to ending legal abortion. It's an unfortunate fact and an unfortunate reality, but it is true.
Kate Michaelman is the executive director of the National Abortion and Reproductive Rights Action League.
Just recently, he, with support of the anti-choice movement, you know, anointed a Sanctity of Life Day, in which he called for, you know, protecting the unborn, meaning, you know, that he would make abortion illegal. So it's code word.
Michaelman says the administration's proposal will do more harm to women in the long run. For instance, a woman's medical treatment may be denied in favor of the health of an embryo. Pro-choice advocates insist the Bush administration improve state funding for pregnant women in order to offer comprehensive medical treatment. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, I'm Kutta Mester.
The 38th Munich Security Conference is taking place this weekend in the old center of the Bavarian capital. Governmental, business, and military leaders from 30 countries are expected to attend. NATO dominates the conference, however, and thousands of demonstrators plan to protest its aggressive policies. From Munich, Patrick Beckett reports.
Munich police successfully argued in court last night to ban all demonstrations in Munich until late Saturday night. Thousands of people in Munich have no official time and place to demonstrate their opposition to NATO. Ban, 2,000 people turned out in Marienplatz at 5 p.m. tonight. At 5 o'clock, demonstration organizers and their lawyers held a press conference to express their frustration with the court ruling. Angelika Lex is the lawyer representing the organizers.
Die Polizei hat angekündigt, dass es eine sehr niedrige Eingriffsschwelle geben wird.
The police has announced they will have a low level of tolerance, which means they will react immediately if some people get together.
At 6 o'clock tonight, police used loudspeakers, ordering the crowd to disperse, but the people remained peacefully. The police surrounded the square, and a standoff between the two sides began. Klaus Schrier is one of the main organizers. He explains one of the reasons he believes it is important to be in Munich to demonstrate this weekend, NATO expansion in Europe.
Naja, dadurch werden einfach Staaten, die bisher nicht zur NATO,
the most countries there are, in this union,
more troops will be, stationed in different parts. The more they'll be able to dispose over more troops, and of course these new countries will also be participating financially, and not that they will have any say whatsoever in what is done. I mean, the decisions are made in the United States. That's the first instance, and then the stronger European nations like Great Britain, France, and Germany. Countries like Poland or Hungary will just have nothing to say, but they will pay, and their troops will be sent.
Dubbed the Davos of security policy, the Munich Security Conference boasts an impressive array of militaristic representatives. While the names of attendees at this year's conference have not been released for security reasons, the focus on global terrorism will attract leading figures in the security world. Last year, the more than 200 representatives included Wesley Clark, Supreme Allied Commander of Europe, Gerhard Schroeder, German Federal Chancellor, Geoffrey Hoon, Secretary of Defense in Britain, Henry Kissinger, Donald Rumsfeld, and Robin Beard, President and CEO of Raytheon. This year's program also includes discussion of NATO's enhanced role in global security. NATO countries invoked Article 5 of its charter after September 11th, pledging full support to the United States. Last week, NATO countries sent two AWACS planes to patrol American airspace. On Sunday morning, the conference discussion is entitled Global Security, New Challenges, New Strategies. At a press conference earlier this week, NATO Secretary General Lord Robertson expressed his desire to reform and expand the alliance.
Serious work is underway in this alliance to strengthen the capabilities of allied countries and their partners against the threat of terrorism and other asymmetric threats.
The issue of enlargement is at the forefront of NATO policy consideration this year. It is expected there will be an announcement at the NATO conference in Prague later this year of new member states. But the alliance must balance its dependence on Russia for security cooperation with its desire to expand NATO into former Russian republics. Critics charge that NATO is really the North Atlantic strong arm of the United States. In 1999, NATO member states ratified the new strategic concept proposed by the U.S. government. This permits NATO to go beyond its defensive role and intervene against a sovereign state without a mandate from the United Nations. The U.S.-backed NATO war in the Balkans illustrated this principle. Reporting from Munich, I'm Patrick Beckett for Free Speech Radio News.
Die Demonstration auf dem Marienplatz ist gemäß § 15 Versammlungsgesetz durch das Kreisverwaltungsreferat München und den Bayerischen Verwaltungsgerichtshof verboten.
Free Speech Radio News is produced by more than 140 reporters on strike against Pacifica Network News for its censorship of legitimate news stories. With the recent changes at Pacifica, we hope to reach a settlement soon. In the meantime, we continue to produce Free Speech Radio News. This newscast was produced by Aaron Glantz, technical producer Jade Paget-Seekins. This newscast is produced at WMNF Radio in Tampa and KPFA Radio in Berkeley. I'm Max Pringle. Thanks for listening.
I'm Mitch Perry in Tampa. For some of the most cogent and challenging analysis on what's happening in Afghanistan, the Middle East, and here at home, no newscast delivers more than Free Speech Radio News. This broadcast only stays on the air with your financial support. Please donate to Free Speech Radio News online at www.fsrn.org. That's www.fsrn.org. Or call 510-287-5551. That's 510-287-5551. Thanks for your support.